Okay, I'm going to go and dive in since the first couple of things are boilerplates. Although I don't know how this happened because normally my eyes run to it very quickly. Somehow we misspelled, I misspelled my last name as a meeting moderator, but it's tragic. I love my last name. Okay. We're going to go over some notes. We're going to pick a scribe. We're going to do introductions and announcements. We're going to talk about action items real quick. And then the bulk of this call is going to be around the PR for the DID method registry, poll number 25 for the HTTPS DID method spec. In part, really because that opens up some larger issues that I think as a community, it serves us to kick around a bit. So I don't think we're going to get any decisions made today on what types of methods are okay or not okay, but I want to take the time on this call to give people an opportunity to present their thinking and for us as a community to talk about it a little bit. Looks like Chris is having some problems. I don't know if Manu's going to make it today. Is there anyone else on the Digital Bazaar team that can look into the issues Chris is having?
We can poke about, but I don't know that we'll be able to resolve it during this call.
Okay, I just noted he called out Manu for help, and I don't think so.
Yeah,
thank you, Dave.
I don't think Mona will be joining us today.
No, Mona. Okay. All right. Okay, IP notes, as we say every week, these are open to the public, but if you have not agreed to the IP policy, which you do when you join via the W3C, which is an easy process, then we can't consider technical contributions. So go join the group. It's free and it's easy. So we record these calls, we take notes in IRC, and we use IRC to manage the queue. There are some notes in the agenda about how we do that. Please mark present plus to get your name in the attendee list, and you use Q plus to get on the queue. If you are on IRC because you're just joining by phone, just briefly interrupt and ask to be put on the queue, and then we'll get you in the queue so we can go through in order and keep the conversation moving. Okay, we, as usual, we need a scribe to help us take notes today. It would be great if someone volunteered. And seeing not yet a volunteer, I'm going to go, oh, there we go. Amy Guy, thank you very much. Riaro. As Scooby-Doo would say. Thanks, Amy. Okay, introductions and reintroductions. Is there anyone here who's new? It's the first time you've joined us on a call. I'm looking through some of the names in the IRC. Most of them look familiar. I'm not sure who. Bengo, B-E-N-G-O. Chris Boscolo, I think I know the name, but I'm not sure you've introduced yourself.
This is Chris. I have introduced myself, but it's been a while, so I could reintroduce myself.
Perfect. We'll take you up on that.
I've come off and on. I don't always make it to the weekly calls, but I've been participating for a little over a year. I'm the founder of LifeID, and we're building basically an open source version of tokenized self-sovereign identity platform.
Cool. Thank you, Chris. Okay, last chance for anyone else who might be new. Thanks, Chris, for the reintroduction, so we don't have to go through that round of the process. Not hearing anyone, although, you know, don't be shy, guys. Mm-hmm. Okay. We're going to move on. We want to make sure we give folks a chance to speak up and introduce themselves. Of course, you don't have to. All sorts of reasons why you might be joining us and not want to step up to the introduction process. Okay, announcements and reminders. So the first thing I want to share for folks who may not have gotten the emails or seen the emails is the folks who've been focused on the DID spec and DID resolution have resurrected the weekly calls, which are going to be on Thursdays. And there are two, one focusing on the DID spec itself, which is 1 to 2 p.m. PDT. I guess it is going to be PDT now moving forward, which is currently 20 UTC. I think that's not going to be true in a week, but we'll update this as we move forward. And then the DID resolution spec call will follow on that. So basically two calls every week, and the Zoom is there in the agenda. So if you want to join that conversation, please do so. Okay, the other two announcements real quickly. The NO conference is coming up. It's next week, I guess, March 25th through 27th in Vegas. So you'll probably be, if you're in the identity or related to the identity space, you'll be seeing stuff from that. And for those of you who go, look forward to reports if there's anything going on. The NO conference, K-N-O-W. And we can drop that URL into the chat. And then IAW is April 30th through May 2nd. So that's still another month and a half away. But I know a lot of us will be there. Okay, any other announcements? Feel free to hop on the queue if you've got something you want to share with the group. Okay. All right, so let's talk about action items. And but before I dive into this and click on this link, which I will also put in here, I want to thank Kim Duffy for the background work. For those of you who have been regulars on this call, we went through a process where we had an insane amount of time that we spent every week trying to go through all the open action items and all the open work items. Kim, Chris, and I have come up with a scheme that, as I understand it, Kim did most of the background work to actually simplify this. So is this going to open for me? Okay, so these are the selected items that the chairs pulled out on Friday. Kim, are you here? Can you address this number 59? DID methods in the registry with without associated DID specs?
Yeah. So that one, okay, that is issue number 59 out in IRC. And when that started, we had four, what is it called? Sorry, DID methods without an associated specification. One of them had been addressed, and I think it's Jolacom. And so that one's good, but we still have missing specs for Dominode, UPort, and consent. And I think the problem that happened there, actually, I think consent was added via, Domino was added via PR without a spec, and I don't have a contact for that. But UPort and consent were in the original PR, so they were probably just overlooked. Either way, if we can get owners for those, or if some combination of Drummond and Manu can hunt that down, we do have individual issues tracking those now in the DID method registry. And those are basically these issues that I'll Nice. okay, so I think what we're going to do here, and we sort of have to pull in the chairs of the, or sorry, not chairs, the, what are they called, editors of that GID method registry to make sure of the process. But I think that we're going to have to start, you know, clamping down at some point and saying, you know, if it's not, okay, one, we have to start enforcing that for a PR to be successful, you have to link to a spec, and that spec has to have certain minimal properties. And I've noticed Drummond is enforcing that in recent submissions. But for these ones that have gotten in there without link to a spec, we have to figure out what to do with them. So I think at least one of them, we know that there's probably a spec somewhere that can be pointed to. But yeah, we have to have that registry make sense. So Joe, you're on the queue.
I just want to know, I think the, now I forgot because you made me laugh. Yeah, it's really gone out the other way. Okay, if it comes back up. So the next, oh, that's what I want to say. So process-wise, with regard to where we're at, I'm trying to take a lesson from Ayanna's handling of when DNS records go bad, which is to be very slow about pulling things out because of failure to communicate. So it was mentioned in one of our calls, we should just delete those. But these people may not know they're on the verge of being deleted, and since we can't reach them, I really don't want to take them out until we've gone through at least some process of trying to reach them and giving them an opportunity to participate. If they're simply old and stale and out of date, we will remove them, but I want to give us some process and some time to get to that point. And so I see that Kalia mentioned she knows the Dominode folks, so thank you, Kalia, for offering to reach out to them. That would be great. I'm not sure who knows the other outstanding issues, outstanding methods, but I would love to hear back from these folks. I'd love to see their specs. It's not that we want to kick people out. We just want to make sure that the methods that are securing names are, in fact, viable at some level. And right now, that means having a written specification. Okay. So the next issue is the DID explainer for the tag and integrate into the DID primer. I think someone changed the name of that one. That's very interesting. Okay. Trying to think what we talked about. So this is assigned to me and Dan Byrne, and Dan couldn't make it on the call today. He's got his hands full getting the CR pushed out for the verifiable credentials. So there was a question on this, namely around whether or not the explainer is something we need for the charter. And I think that relates in particular to, does the W3C tag do anything with regard to the charter? And I was hoping Manny would be on the call because I think he knows something about that. I don't know if we have anyone else on the call who knows the process well enough at the W3C.
I would just say that I definitely think we want to have an explainer when the charter goes out. It makes it that much easier for people to consume and understand what the group is really going to be all about. Where the charter provides the scope and the constraints on what you can do, but the explainer helps people understand who the technology is going to be used for, what the technology is trying to do, that sort of thing. And so the explainer is extremely helpful in helping educate people and have them understand why they should be voting for the charter.
Dave Longley, Amy. So I agree that we need something that explains beyond the spec, but the explainer is a particular structure that the tag asked for. And we now have three active publications, if we can, if the primer is still active. We have the explainer that Dan and I started working on at the end of last year after TPAC. We have the primer, and we have a document that Drummond started working on at Rebooting. So I feel like we've got too many documents trying to scratch the itch you just described, Dave. So to me, this particular issue is that explainer as requested and structured by the W3C tag. Something more than what we have in the primer or what Drummer's doing. And I see Drummond on the queue. Go ahead, Drummond.
I just wanted to quickly say that we wanted to make sure that the document that we started at Rebooting and we want to take forward was not, we hoped it would might be helpful, but we didn't want to get, you know, start any confusion, you know, with what was needed for, you know, the W3C application process, the DID, you know, process. Whatever's needed there, we wanted to design specifically for the DID charter. And, you know, if it's helpful, but we weren't intending that document to be part of the DID charter. We don't want to complicate that process.
Okay. Thank you for that clarification. So I think I'm going to leave this issue as it is. I'd like to check in with someone who understands the tag's role in the chartering. And then, so we'll review this again next week. I know Dan and I both have our hands full. Because apparently this needed to be done by mid-January. So that didn't quite happen. Okay. Last issue in that set is issue number 21. Thank you, Kim. Can you unpack that, Kim? Or is Chris the better candidate? Oh, you're on the queue. Perfect. Chris, thanks, Kim.
Yeah, Chris is, but I put myself on the queue to sort of disagree with that latest comment. So we can follow up this Friday, but the latest, okay, so it's the various Ethereum EIPs. I guess 725 is one, and UPort or sorry, there's some publications around about like the ones that UPort has published versus I think 725, which is not a UPort thing. Chris's latest comment is that he doesn't want the item to be closed until some documentation or links to this topic is in one of our repos, work items, or reports, searchable and findable by public and prospective CCG members. My personal opinion is that that's just not really required here. I don't know why we're putting that burden on ourselves, basically. So I think the things that we care about are covered in the DID method registry. So if they want things to be, you know, if it's a DID method that we want to be referenced there, then that's appropriate. But we don't have that sort of requirement for anything else. That documentation of a different community's efforts are required. So I'll just put a comment in there saying that I recommend that we just this, and yeah, that's all.
Okay. Thank you, Kim. Chris, I know you're on the call. I don't know if you want to respond to that or perhaps sign up to write some of that documentation. I do see Marcus. Go ahead, Marcus.
I just wanted to say at some point there was someone who volunteered to do that research on documentation, but I guess that didn't happen. I just know the ERC 725 proposal that's changing quite a bit, so people are working on a new version of that, so that would be ERC 725 version 2 or something like that. I also know that the Yolocom people, they have some document or some information, at least in their FAQ on their website, that explains why they don't use ERC 725 but instead create their own Ethereum-based did method. Yeah, I just wanted to say that.
Okay, thanks, Marcus. I know Kim mentioned in the IRC that Bodan, aka Drabiv, is assigned to that. So, I don't know what next steps are for this action item. I'm not hearing anyone on this call step up to volunteer to do it. So, Kim, go ahead.
Yeah, so I think I'm going to add in my comment. I just don't think we need it here. I think it's useful in general for people to have access to, but I don't think it's sort of a action item for the CCG. So I'm going to make a comment about that. I think maybe Chair should discuss on Friday. Until then, I can ping Bowden to see, you know, does he plan to address it? But in my opinion, if no one has plans to address it, I just think we can close it.
Yeah, I'm in agreement with you, Kim. So let's ping Bowden and see where we can get, and we'll look at it again on Friday. Okay, so those were our open issues that the chair selected to bring our attention to, and I'm not seeing anyone on the queue. So let me head back over to the agenda, which is this our main event of the day. So feel free to hop on the queue. I'm just going to give a very brief introduction. And by very brief, I mean I'm going to put the URL in. And I'm going to say, please do try and read this if you want to comment. There were lots of backs and forth. And I want to open the conversation to more than just the HTTPS spec. Marcus had proposed, a bit tongue-in-cheek, I believe, the did Facebook method. And there's a question about do DIDs need to be decentralized at the method level? And I think that's an interesting question. And I wanted to kick off by just letting the folks who have already participated in the issue to offer their opinions on how we got here. Go ahead, Marcus.
Yeah, so first of all, the Facebook did method that I was proposing in a pull request. Yes, that's not a serious proposal. That's just an attempt to add some additional color to the discussion. When I saw that the HTTPS did method was being proposed, my opinion on this is that neither Facebook usernames nor domain names are DIDs. They are not decentralized identifiers. Basically, every presentation or every talk that you hear about Zuko's triangle, you always hear domain names as an example of identifiers that are globally unique and human readable, but not decentralized. I believe that is also the essence of what distinguishes user-centric identity from self-sovereign identity. If you build an identity system based on domain names as identifiers, then it may be user-centric, but it doesn't fulfill strict assumptions of self-sovereign identity. Those identifiers also don't satisfy the assumptions of the original DPKI paper, Decentralized Public Key Infrastructure, which says very clearly that we want to build on identifiers that don't depend on any central authority or intermediary. So I think the challenge that we have here is that we are, with the documents, we're inventing a discovery format or a document format that describes metadata about identifiers. And that could be useful also for identifiers that are not DIDs. So I think that's the challenge here, right? We're building DIDs and decentralized identifiers, but we're also building DID documents, and DID documents as a format, as a discovery format, could be useful for identifiers that are not decentralized, such as domain names. So I have some ideas maybe on what to do about that, but I I'll stop here for now.
Okay. That triggered some questions for me, but I'm going to go back to the queue. Dimitri.
So I'd like to provide a counterpoint to that. One, I think an HTTPS DIB method could provide a really valuable bridge technology for the various providers to experiment with DIBs and DIB documents. And it's a way to include a section of the decentralized identity community, like Tim Berners-Lee's Solid Project, and some other very similar sort of ecosystems. It's a way to get them to join our group, to join the conversation, join the ecosystem. After they've joined, we can make an argument that, okay, so you took this step, here's why a ledger-based DID is even better than HTTPS-based DID. But I feel that to deny them entry on political grounds, like you're not decentralized enough, is really unhelpful.
Okay, thank you, Dimitri. Kim.
So, you know, never use Facebook, but I love this method. So I like that Marcus called it out as a thought exercise. And for me, and a lot of us that are sort of trying to present DIDs and what they are and their different DID method properties, I find that this one it's very useful from an educational perspective. And sort of to build on what Dimitri was saying, it's good for teasing apart, you know, so if you work with a Facebook DID method, it's easy for people to understand what that is and how they update the ledger. It's a good launching point from which to talk about what are the points of failure using Facebook as your ledger, things like that. And it's a good way to sort of point out the boundaries and the strengths of each of other DID methods. So I'm a big fan of this and thought exercise DIDs in general. DID methods, sorry.
Cool. Thanks, Kim. Okay, I think that means I'm next. So a couple of quick things. A question for Marcus. Based on your comments, I was left wondering what your position was. It seemed like you started out saying if the underlying method isn't itself decentralized, then it shouldn't be a DID. But then you made a case that the discovery mechanism might make that interesting and therefore allowed. So if you could comment on that. I wanted to note two things. One, I think we may already be decentralized, so which really gets to the second question as well, which is, what does it mean to be decentralized? So the fact that I can use different DID methods is a form of decentralization. There is no central entity in charge of what methods are out there. We have a registry, but that's an assistant. It's a lookup. It's not definitive. We don't have that level of decentralization with DNS, for example. So that is a centralized architecture because it goes right down to the root servers. And I don't have an opportunity in a domain name to say, I want to use this other root. But with DID methods, you can. So the ability to vary the method is in fact a form of decentralization at the platform level. But even if that's not sufficient for advocates of decentralization, and I like decentralization, but the question is, what does decentralization mean with enough clarity so that we could make a judgment about whether or not a particular method qualifies as a DID method? And I don't think there is such a definition. At least I haven't heard one that feels compelling to me. So those are my thoughts. I think we might already be there. But also, I don't know how to define it so that it can be rigorous. Okay, Drummond.
Yeah, I already, I'm going to save Amy some typing by saying I just entered into the chat the two points I wanted to make, which is I loved Marcus's post, and I felt at rebooting and the Verified Bitcoin's working group meeting, we had some good discussions about what I'm calling centralized DID methods. My position on this is two parts. I believe that we should not prohibit, because we really can't prohibit DID methods that are based on centralized registries. However, that the spec should be very, very clear that about what decentralization really means, and that the level of trust or assurance that you can have in centralized in DID methods that rely on centralized registries is different than and we should not mince words about the point of the spec being decentralized identifiers. But again, I don't think we should prohibit other ones. It becomes a much different question in my mind. What we should do about methods that are clearly based on centralized registries in the DID method registry. I might consider, or at least throw out, that we look at categorizing or having a separate, literally category section of that for if we do start to register DID methods that are based on centralized registries, we put them in a separate section. We clearly and completely warn that these methods are not based on decentralized systems. That's it.
Okay, Jonathan.
So the in the IPID spec, there is we do support this syntax. So human readable names that resolve, and that will actually right now resolve to my DID document. I don't really like it. It relies on DNS in the background, and it relies on, in particular, the text field being a DNS link. So the IPNS namespace via a cryptographic key value pair will resolve this and cache it into the DHT. And so I think it's human readable and it's convenient, but certainly it opens up to all sorts of vulnerabilities. But like Dimitri said, this is like a bridge technology that actually gets us there. I am talking with Adan, who is in charge of the IPNS aspect of IPFS, about how do we do this more securely. And maybe it is like a signed document originally coming from the DID. So, or within the DID document, actually having a way to get a other DID that actually you can actually then go fetch out. But just as far as just human readability, DNS is there, and it is pretty well supported. And as I demoed in Barcelona, this is cached into the DHT. So it is when I was playing with the Wi-Fi, I was offline, and yet it was still resolving properly. That opens up issues of security, which I actually had mentioned before about man-in-the-middle and DNS spoofing attacks. Which is how actually why this came up for my method. So more of a comment.
Well, thank you, Jonathan. Marcus.
So decentralization is hard to define, right? There are lots of different ways of how you could think and argue about that. There's one attempt to define a metric of decentralization in the original EPKI paper, and I liked one of the comments that was on that HTTPS pull request by Sandra, I think, who said that control is often obfuscated and it's not just a black and white or yes or no question of whether something is decentralized or not. But Facebook usernames, just like domain names, are I think with all the background and history that we have with user-centric and identity and SSI, I don't think we can consider them decentralized identifiers. So if we add them to the method registry, the HTTPS method, and I understand all the convenience and how it's technically interesting and how it can be a bridge technology and so on, but it will be a contradiction to what the DPKI paper and also the DID spec itself says. If we read the abstract of the DID spec, then that simply doesn't apply to domain names. Again, I think the challenge is that we're defining an interesting discovery format or identifier description format called the DID document, which as a document format for metadata about an identifier can be very useful also for centralized identifiers, right? But we should not call them DIDs. That's the challenge. People who are working with domain names or HTTPS URLs, they could use Webfinger, right? And JRD, it's an existing discovery format. But they want to use the documents. I don't know why, because they're more modern or cooler or more interesting format. In the same way, there's also WebID profiles, right? That's another discovery format. If we look in the solid space and WebID standard, and there's a WebID profile. So I think what people want to do is they want to use the documents as a useful and smart new discovery format on identifiers that are not these. So that's the challenge. I don't know, maybe we should rename the format. Maybe we should not call it the document, but instead call it something else.
Okay, thank you, Marcus. So my note to myself was ask Drummond for a definition that handles sovereign correctly. I love the contributions as the Sovereign and Evernym folks have brought to DIDs and verifiable credentials. But I think there's a legitimate position that says that permission blockchains have a centralizing function, because those who give permission can be subject to action by the state via subpoena and or the use of force. So that's an argument by what you might call Bitcoin maximalists, or folks who really are focused on the anti-censorship of permissionless blockchains. And I think both of those ideas of what it means to be decentralized are valuable. And I'm just not sure. I mean, maybe we can come up with a definition. I like what Drummond said in terms of we probably shouldn't deny methods that are in some way decentralized, because we probably can't, but that we should advocate for decentralized identifiers, for some notion of decentralized. We just need to come up with what that notion is so that it works with the people who are helping create this standard. Okay, Chris, you're up.
Yeah, so one of the thoughts I had is that instead of trying to frame this as whether it's centralized or decentralized, can we frame it in terms of the security guarantees that the creator of the DID has over the DID? In other words, with HTTPS as an example, I can create a DID and I lose control over the ability for somebody to replace the DID document that will resolve at that DID if I use HTTPS. So there's some guarantee based on the method that the creator of the DID is the one that can at least identify if the DID document being returned from that DID has been tampered with or is different than the one that should be returned. Can we somehow frame the requirements in terms of the security guarantees of the DID lookups instead of trying to frame it as sufficiently centralized or not centralized?
Yeah, that's a great suggestion. Sam.
I was just trying to get clear on maybe if you could give an example. I'm trying to get an example of the different use cases behind whether or not you'd want it to resolve to something like your Facebook or not. I guess what I was thinking was in terms of something like machine readable terms or something like consent, for ads, attribution, it's bouncing all over the place. And I know that they've expressed interest in decentralized identifiers. And I guess my question is, would it be like, would the use case be something like, these are my ad preferences or my ad terms or my tracking terms, and that would resolve to somewhere that already tracks me, but can now have a document that's my preferences or something that gives me a little bit more agency? Would that be how the argument for using something like that, or am I way off base?
Torn between trying to address that. Marcus, if you don't mind, I'm just going to provide some context to Sam. Actually, I'll just go on the queue. That's the more friendly way to do it. Go ahead, Marcus.
Okay, I just wanted to say, besides decentralization, another property that we say that it has is persistence. Right? I would argue that doesn't apply to Facebook usernames or domain names either.
I'm sorry, I'm having a hard time hearing you, Marcus.
Sorry, I was saying, besides decentralization, what we also claim for DIDs is persistence, right? And I would say domain names and usernames are not persistent either. That's also been a well-known problem in the identity space since the early days of OpenID, basically. So, okay, I'll stop here. Just wanted to mention it.
Okay. Okay, to respond to Sam, two things. Ideally, the DID document should not contain any personal information, which to my mind is likely to include preferences of the kind you mentioned. So I think DIDs can be a gateway to look up preferences, but this shouldn't be in the DID document. So that use case might be out of scope for DIDs and DID documents. But I think the use case is simply to say, for example, right now there's no way for Facebook doesn't provide a way for me to attach a public key to my Facebook login. That might be interesting, so that people who trust Facebook can bootstrap up a key that's associated with me that only has a security guarantees that Facebook provided it to them. So Facebook could have faked it, or a bad actor who's hacked Facebook, or a disgruntled employee within Facebook. But for those who are willing to rely on that guarantee, at least now they have a public key, which then we can bootstrap other forms of interactions. That's my attempt at a potential use case that might make Facebook interesting. Go ahead, Dimitri. Dimitri, you might be muted.
You are correct. Sorry about that. So I want to add to the discussion happening in IRC and Drummond's proposal about the four core qualities of DIDs. I'd like to agree with the other proposals in IRC that only cryptographic verifiability is a worthwhile one to focus on. For example, ephemeral DIDs, off-ledger, on-the-wire DIDs, especially ones that Sovereign, in fact, has been working on at the last rebooting, those don't have the persistence requirement. I feel requiring persistence cuts off a whole domain of very valid use cases and should not be in there.
Cool. Thanks, Dimitri. Not seeing anyone on queue, I want to bring up these notions at Drummond. Unless you want to introduce it, Drummond, jump on the queue. I do think that's the direction maybe that we can go to in terms of talking about qualities. I don't think we have consensus on what those qualities are, especially based on what Dimitri just said, and I'm not sure I like all of them. But I think that that moves us into a direction of a definition for what we mean by decentralized. And maybe we can stop calling it, this is what we mean by decentralized, but this is what we mean by DIDS. But let me go ahead, Drummond.
Yeah, so what Dimitri said actually gave me an idea about how we might characterize it. So they, I've been talking about those four qualities for quite a while, and it has come up in different places. Like, for instance, Sovereign has test networks. Now, those test networks are not persistent. They can get reset, right? There are absolutely DIDs that are on them, but those particular DIDs at that particular network do not have that quality of persistence. DIDs on the Sovereign main network, it's like, you know, the whole reason for the network besides is all for the of the properties, right? Global uniqueness, persistence, cryptographic verifiability, and no, you know, no centralization. And even to Joe, to your point, well, it's a permission network, therefore it's centralized. Well, actually, the amount of work that's gone into decentralization by design, and we're about to publish by the end of the month the Sovereign Governance Framework V2. I mean, yeah, you can always debate it, but I think the effort to provide decentralization is, you know, there's a lot of work going into that. So I think a way to look at it is, at least on those four dimensions, and maybe there are others we should consider as well, any one DID method could be looked at, and you could say, oh, well, some DID methods don't have persistence. Some DID methods don't use centralized registries. And I'm on the fine line between whether, you know, we can objectively judge different DID methods that way versus, you know, Marx's point. If it's a decentralized identifier, but it relies on a centralized registry, should it actually be called a DID? I do agree with the tension there because it feels a little bit like, you know, whitewashing. All right, that's it.
Could I, you know, Kalia, I know you didn't put yourself on the queue, but you had some comments in IRC about the whitewashing around OpenID. Could I convince you to say a few things about that?
Sure. I tried to put myself on the queue. Anyways, it's good. Thanks for asking me to say a few things. This is like new to me. I've been away in India for about 8 weeks, so I'm just coming back into time zone appropriate attendance. And I'm really concerned because of the history of our community developing protocols that are designed to empower end users and individuals. And then, you know, granted, there's issues with the architecture of URLs being the basis of an identity, but the vision is similar, right? And then the large companies came in and sort of, you know, picked up the protocols and implemented them. And so every time we go log in with Facebook or log in with Google, we're using OpenID and OAuth, but they're totally centralized. And I hear the arguments that DID documents can be used for any endpoint, okay, but I think I just don't want to see this get co-opted. I want us to actually build the decentralized thing we're talking about and really empower individuals owning their own identifiers and hold, you know, and hold that out as where we're going and not just, you know, think that Facebook adopting this solves the problem because it doesn't. I don't know. I feel like that's enough said.
Plus okay. One.
Thanks, Claire. Okay. I'm not seeing anyone on the queue. Thank you. For that conversation, I'm not sure if the consensus has shifted, but I think there's some more clarification on the ideas people are bringing to the table on this question. And I'm seeing Marcus on the queue. So go ahead, Marcus.
I just wanted to say also orthogonal maybe to this discussion, whether or not we want to be able to discover the documents from domain names or usernames. Just a separate effort is also to be able to discover a deed from those non-deeds. Right? So you can start with a Facebook name or a domain name or any other kind of identifier and discover a deed from that. And then in your app or service or backend database, you store that deed. So you only use the initial identifier, the human readable identifier, or the non-deed identifier to discover a deed. And then you keep working with the deed. There is some work that has been done on that. So there's a draft specification how you can discover a deed from a domain name. You could use Webfinger, you could embed some data in an HTML file, and so that's just an additional feature. It doesn't really solve maybe the original question whether or not we want to be able to discover deed documents directly from a non-deed.
Thank you, Marcus. Yeah, that's interesting. Go ahead, Jonathan.
Yeah, I think just going back to this DNS link that I shared in my DID method, that it is a cryptographic key value pair, DNS, which is why I sort of been reluctantly supporting it, which in DNS is ubiquitous. So I think it is that bridge technology that may get us there. And I think, I'm working hopefully with Adon as far as how do we do this maybe with DNSSEC, or signing the cryptographically the string in the text record that is the link to, in our case, the IPLD object. So I don't like it, but I think it is a bridge technology, like Dimitri had stated.
Great. Thanks, Jonathan. Moses.
Hey, everybody. I'm actually working with the Universal Postal Union around postal addresses. So they have something called postcode, which could increase the reliability of international shipping because people kind of don't know how to write in another country's method. But one of the things we're talking about is being able to resolve a guaranteed or verifiable postal shipping address from a DID, which is kind of an interesting model. Plus, the other thing you should know is that the UPU is a subset of the United Nations. And the idea here is that countries are actually sovereign but subservient to the United Nations or the rule of law, and that human beings should be the same way, even if we're self-sovereign. We need to be sovereign to something, and that should be the rule of law, which allows, you know, for people to submit a court order, and we could deal with that in our system instead of complete chaos and, you know, anarchy. Anyway, those are my observations, and I'd be happy to talk to anybody about this stuff offline. Thanks.
Okay, great. Thanks, Moses, for that vote for civilization. And I mean that sincerely, even though it was half snarky. I wanted to say that there's actually some other people can speak to how broadly it's used, but there's a notion of trust on first use, which is a certain level of quality that you can give to the underlying cryptographic identifier. For example, when you SSH into a server that you've never been to before, you'll get a pop-up say, hey, do you want to save this key forever? And it's presuming that the DNS worked correctly or the IP address or the IP routing worked correctly. And you are going to be trusting that key because it's on your first use. And you don't have a better key. So that's a particular architecture for a certain quality of assurance about a particular key. And I think some of these bridge technologies, that's all they're good for. Like, it's not that we're trusting Facebook. We're using Facebook as a trust on first use type of level. So I just wanted to introduce that into the conversation in case that helps folks think about how we get there from here. Okay, speaker queue is empty. We've got 3 minutes left. Anyone else? I think we're good for an early wrap. Again, thanks, folks, for the conversation. I'm glad this is getting into our minutes, and I think there's maybe some things here that can flow into the DID spec conversation in terms of how we might do some of that dance between what we want to advocate without trying to do what we can't do, which is prevent DID methods that aren't centralized. So I think there's some language in there that we can flow into the DID spec and the DID resolution about what we advocate ideologically and architecturally, and I look forward to seeing this conversation get into there. Okay, Drummond, you're on the queue.
Yeah, I just wanted to provide a quick reminder that we will begin regular weekly calls on Thursday, a two-hour block, first hour on the DID spec, and the second hour on DID resolution, starting this Thursday at 1 o'clock Pacific time, and for the first one, and 2 o'clock Pacific time for the second one. So we sent an email to the list, but I just wanted to provide a reminder to folks, and thank you to Marcus for hosting the Zoom room.
Great. And moving forward, just for clarity, because I know we're going to – that will probably continue past what's called the daylight savings time skew. The set time is in Pacific. Is that correct?
Yes. So
when Europe changes to daylight savings time in a week or two, the Pacific time will stay the same, but the meetings will shift an hour for those folks who are in the EU.
Right, and we will send a reminder email to the list, the day before the day of the meeting to make sure that folks are aligned on time and Zoom room. So, one question, Joe. Typically, on meetings like that, we like keep notes in a Google Doc, and then we just send the whole contents to the list. Is that okay, or do we need to use IRC, or what do you think?
In terms of the IPR requirements, I think capturing a Google Doc and posting the content to the list is halfway there. If the Google document stays around, I guess the potential problem is that you lose attribution, or you may lose attribution. Although if the notes clearly say who said what, then we still have it. In that case, I think it would be fine.
What we've been doing in the DID resolution call so far is just recording the sessions.
Yes, that is useful as well. I'm not sure the best way for us to support it. We have a kind of automated pipeline for these calls. Go ahead, Kim.
Yeah, the other thing, though, about these calls, and we can take this offline, but we need to talk to Manu about it because there's this whole thing that where it sets up recording like an hour before the call, and I don't know how to get into that schedule to use that whole pipeline. So that's partially why I was thinking, just for these off calls, just do what you can.
Yeah, that's what we've done in the past, and I think it's worked fine. I'm just double checking, and okay.
Yeah.
Keep it simple.
So my short answer is on the Google Doc, as long as you're clearly attributing who said what,
yes,
then that will help us deal with the IPR questions that might be graded if we don't have good notes.
Exactly. That's exactly the way we take notes. So, yeah. And it, as Michael said, if we can also record it, then we have that as well, and all is good. All right. Well, again, it's open. Anyone in the CCG that wants to join and help move together those two bodies of work, we welcome you.
Okay. Thank you all very much. We're 1 minute over. This is a wrap. Thanks for your contributions. Appreciate it.